Hello, and welcome to Our Planet Sings on CFRU 93.3 FM. My name is Rob Dixon, and I'll be talking to you today about environmental issues and the value of artistic and emotional accounts of nature. Good morning. I hope everyone's doing well today on this mild winter morning. Today we'll be hearing the third portion of the vermicomposting lecture given at the Organic Conference this year. Jocelyn Kelly will be reporting on that. And I'll also present a headline regarding the Shell oil and gas drilling off the coast of the Arctic Ocean.
Hello, hello. The world of vermicomposting from small to megascale. This was a workshop presented by Kathy Nesbitt on Sunday, February 3rd, during the 32nd Annual Guelph Organic Conference and Expo that took place from January 31st to February 3rd of this year. We aired the first 30 minutes of this workshop on February 15th, and then the second 30-minute segment was aired on March 1st. So if you missed those, you can hear them online in our archives at cfru.ca under Our Planet Sings. The third and final 30-minute segment you'll hear in just a moment. Kathy Nesbitt is a worm advocate and founder of Kathy's Crawly Composters. This environmental business was established in 2002 and specializes in vermicomposting, that is, composting using worms. Kathy has been involved in numerous collection and composting research projects and has diverted several tons of organic material from landfills. So great work that she's doing, and I hope you enjoy the workshop.
So harvesting. So with a single bin, with a container like this, what you're going to do is the easiest way. There's several methods to harvest your single unit. The easiest, fastest way, and the most fun way is to dump your bin out on a plastic sheet, put it in round piles. The worms are photosensitive or afraid of the light, so they go down into the piles. So the smaller your piles, the faster the harvest will go. If your material is really wet, you may want to put a little fan on it so that that will drive the worms faster down into the pile. The worms will only, if you have big piles, the worms are only going to go down to get away from the light. So then you're going to scoop out, oh, they're not down at the bottom. No, they don't need to go to the bottom. They just need to get out of the light. So just so you know how that works. And it's about an hour to do a bin, you know, this size. Alternately, you can do side to side, so you can move the material, kind of push everything to one side as if you have an imaginary divider, add some fresh bedding in the other side, start feeding in the new side where the bedding is, and then the worms will migrate over once they've finished. However, I haven't been successful really in that way, just because there's always material that the worms are still converting, and some of them are going to stay over there. Because they'll consume the cast up to 7 times to get the nutrients out, and then they'll move over to the other side. There's mechanical systems. So there's Trommel screens, which looks like a big spaceship, and you put your stuff through, and it turns, and then the material falls through, the beautiful, lovely stuff falls through. Any big chunky bits will bounce on through, and they'll boop out the end, and they go back in the system. Same with the worms, will go through there. I personally never put my worms through a Trommel screen because it just seems like they would hate that that ride. Anyway, so I don't do that. I do a harvest, and then I put the castings through the Trommel screen. that's because I'm, you know, cuckoo. But so castings are nature's finest fertilizer. It's all we need to grow delicious, nutritious fruits and vegetables. And just quickly about the castings. As the food travels through the belly of the worm, it gets encased in gel. That was the shiny, juicy stuff that you saw in those micro videos. Each little casting is like a time-release capsule, and the earth takes from it as it needs it. It's water-soluble. It won't burn your plants, but it's very rich. So you don't need a lot. You just need to use a little bit.
Are the castings balanced? Do they provide balance?
Do they provide balanced soil? Sure, why not? But of course. What else can I say? Yes, I believe they do.
Okay.
Yes.
So how long would you say a batch, you would let a batch, keep feeding a batch until it's
it's ready to harvest?
It's 3 to 5 months in a basic kit, and it depends on how small your particle size is, temperature, moisture. You know, there's so many factors that determined how long it's going to take, and even the type of stuff you're putting in. You know, I've had customers call me and say, worms don't really like potato peels, do they? And I go, well, it's not that they don't like potato peels. It's that potatoes are root vegetables. Potatoes, carrots. So if your potato peel has a little eye on it, yes, that's the seed. That's right. Mm-hmm. And this is nutritious soil, so it will probably start to grow. If something's growing, it's not decomposing. If it's not decomposing, the worms can't get to it. So they can't eat it if it's still growing. So it's not that they don't like potato peels. It's that they take longer to break down, and if it's growing, they're not going to be able to get to it. Oh, yes, question.
I've got a question on balanced soil.
Yes.
I don't know, but I would guess that whatever you put in the worm bin in terms of your NPK balance and micronutrients, exactly the same thing is going to come out of the end. Yeah. And so if you need more phosphorus, if you put more phosphorus in...
I'm not sure about that. Did I just skip past something? I'm not sure about that, because when you test your castings, it's not about the NPK. If anyone buys fertilizer and it's got the three numbers, that's nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, it's really not about that for the worm castings. The numbers are very small for all of those, because it's about adding the life back into the soil. It's the micronutrients, the microorganisms and the nutrients, rather than those specific things.
You can deal with much lower levels because they're much more available.
Right, yes, thank you, that's it. Yes?
So you let the worms migrate back into your composter. What about the eggs? Do you have to harvest the eggs, or do worms just produce so many eggs that you don't have to bother with that? You can just leave the eggs in your composter and throw it around your garden?
Yes. Personal choice. I mean, that's up to you. The eggs are pretty small. It's like an Easter egg hunt when you're looking for the eggs. That's personal. I mean, if you want to pick out all the eggs, some people do. That's really long time. It's probably going to take longer than an hour to harvest your bin if you're going to pick out all the eggs. I wouldn't worry about that. And if a worm egg gets into your plant, say your house plant or something, no big deal. Just put an apple core in there every now and then and feed the worms. It's okay. That's going to be a new way. I think that if anyone's looking for start a new business, that will be something that can be done. And this is, and I'm saying this straight face, going to an office, you know how they have people come in and fertilize and clip and stuff? They'll just be adding a couple of, can I have your banana peel? And then just adding that in there. Question, yes.
So is the goal when you're harvesting to get enough worms to start again, or to remove the worms because you don't want to add them to the outdoors because they won't live there, or they'll take over, or they're not native?
Oh, sort of all of those answers. When you're harvesting to get the worms out, are you getting all the worms because you want to have them? Well, the worms are $45 a pound. So I don't mind if you just put them outside. That's okay. But you'll be calling me again.
To my garden is just only.
They're not soil dwellers, so you're not going to add them to your garden. Yeah, if the eggs or the worms get into your garden, they will migrate to a compost pile, or they'll just perish in the soil and become part of the soil. Yeah. So yes, you're separating to get the worms out because they're valuable, and they're the workers, right? So you want to use them. They're not needed in the compost anymore. So quickly, I'm going to run out of time, but I want to talk about some of the projects that I've done, because I just want to let you know that this is a way of the future, and there's so much accessible resources for the worms. So I did a coffee project. We're in Bradford. We had 9 coffee shops, and just, I'm not going to go to the whole story, but the hockey player one wouldn't play with me. The coffee shop named after the hockey player, they wouldn't play with me. So I went to Country Style, and we have traders in those. And I said to the owner, and I meant it when I said that if he participated in my project, we would increase business. Every business wants more business. because I thought, you know, when the environmentalists find out that you're being so responsible with your coffee grounds, they're going to flock to your shop. They're going to ride their bike, take the bus. There's no bus in Bradford. they'll carpool or jog or whatever. They're going to get there. And they're going to have their to-go mug. I wish I had my mug here. They'll have their to-go mug because they're environmentalists. So he agreed to participate because that was a pretty good pitch, don't you think? and so I went every day and collected their coffee grounds. This was the slowest shop in Bradford. It's closed now, so slow. That we collected 1,100 pounds of coffee grounds and filters that month. 1,100 pounds. Oh my gosh. Wow. So for some reason, I had too much time. I was separating the coffee grounds and the filter. Why? Because the filter is also a carbon source. If you use coffee filters, you can just rip those up and add them into your compost or your worm bin. But somehow I was separating them. So my backyard smelled like a coffee shop. It was fabulous. And I am pretty high energy already, even without carrot juice. And so that summer, wow, lots of stuff was getting done. There I was separating my coffee grounds, filters, tons of things getting done. And somebody said to me, you know your coffee ground project? And I said, yes. Do you wear gloves? And I said, gloves? No, why would I wear gloves? It's just coffee grounds. And then they said, have you heard of the nicotine patch? Oh my gosh, oh yeah, oh, the nicotine patch, you know, when you're trying to quit smoking and you put that on and then, yeah, thank you for laughing and getting that one. Caffeine careening through my veins, oh my gosh, sorry Rick for that summer. So 1,100 pounds, so I thought, oh my gosh, what are other people doing? And, you know, coffee grounds don't even need to be composted. They can be put on, you know, some plants prefer acidic soil, so blueberries, roses, azaleas. There's a whole host of plants that prefer acidic soil. Not that, you know, a coffee conglomerate could put all of their coffee grounds on a rose bush. No, but at least we know there's something that can be done. And I had gardeners calling me because I got media. I had gardeners calling me asking me if they could come and get those coffee grounds. So I was like, oh, I could have a little business here. No. So that was really, really neat. My next project involved grocery store waste. Similar story, I had to go to more than one grocery store to get the waste. Because the first guy said to me, I said, I'd like to collect your unsaleable food scraps. And he said, okay, you're going to have to pay me. Remember what I said about if you produce any volume of food scraps, you pay a lot to get rid of it? Grocery stores pay a lot. So I said, no, I'm going to save you money. You won't have to haul this. You won't have to pay for this to be hauled away. He said, yeah, but you're going to make money down the road from what you get from me. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's true. I'm going to come to your place. I'm going to collect your stuff. I'm going to go home. I'm going to chop it up, feed my worms, wait 3 to 5 months. I'm not going to pay for your scraps. I'm not. No. So I went to another grocery store, no frills, and was immediate. It's all about people. Thank goodness I have a psych degree. It's all about people. I went to No Frills, was immediately embraced by environmental produce manager. They saw the benefit. They're going to save money. Every business wants more business and to save money. They're going to help a local business. Maybe not every business wants that, but they did. And they're going to help the environment. And I don't know in what order they wanted to do this, but they agreed to participate and they gave me staff to load my car with the 3,300 pounds that I diverted that month. Wow, this is just a little grocery store, by the way, like a regular size, not a super size center, whatever they're called, those big ones. Just a little grocery store in Bradford. If you know Bradford, it's the little No Frills there. Wow, 3,300 pounds? Can you get out? Are we wasteful or what? And we didn't buy vegetables that much, by the way, or fruit. This stuff was still good, but, you know, and I don't know the grocery industry, but the stuff, when the new stuff comes in, the old stuff has to go somewhere, and wow, so there I was to divert it. One day, you know, this is a longer story. I mean, some great stuff came out of this. But one day I collected 40 cases of bananas. Oh, 40 cases. And the nursing home that I had gone to said to me, well, no, we can't take any fruit. All we could take is bananas. So the day I got 40 cases, I said, the nursing home's going to be thrilled. Bananas. So I go to the nursing home and I said, hey, I've got bananas. Would you like them? I didn't say I was bananas. I said I had bananas. And so the person said, oh, you have to talk to the administrator. So I said, okay. So I went and I found the administrator. I said, I have bananas. Would you like them? She said, you have to go and find the head cook. So I went and found the head cook and I said, I have bananas. Would you like them? And, well, she took a bunch. I mean, she was going to send me somewhere else. And I said, come on, somebody make a decision. I'm giving you free bananas. Holy cow. So they took like 6 bananas of 40 cases. Holy, what a waste. Oh. What a sad day. Can you imagine all the frozen bananas or banana cream pie or, I don't know, banana whatever, pudding?
About pesticides in all the food that you're getting from the grocery store?
Yeah, thank you. Am I concerned about pesticides? Absolutely. But I started my business as a waste management tool. So pesticides are going to be a part of if I'm getting stuff from grocery store. I actually have a current relationship with Cora's, one of the Cora's. We've diverted just over 2 tons from one of the Cora's locations. And I'm deeply concerned. The worms seem to be fine, but I'm deeply concerned because last year in my garden, I had 7 different varieties of spices, squashes, pumpkins, and different things. I collect from Cora's, so they have a lot of cantaloupe. I didn't have one cantaloupe plant. I found that disturbing. I mean, yeah. So am I concerned? Absolutely. But it is a waste management tool, and I think that we need to, not that the worms need to be sacrificed, I think that they are fine, and I think that they do, the soil that comes out the other end is much cleaner than it was going in. So, yeah, so that's the reason that I'm doing what I'm doing. Yeah, thank you for that.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM and Our Planet Sings. This is a program that explores environmental issues such as challenges around the overproduction of organic waste. A solution offered by Kathy Nesbitt of Kathy's Crawley Composters is to compost organic materials using worms. She presented a workshop called The World of Vermicomposting from Small to Mega Scale, which was presented during the 32nd Annual Guelph Organic Conference and Expo. We'll return to her workshop after a song by Stompin' Tom Connors, a country music singer from New Brunswick that most Canadians are familiar with, I think. Stompin' Tom passed away on Wednesday, March 6th, at the age of 77. So here's Stompin' Tom singing, "When the Ice Worm Nests Again."
There's a ski dusky maiden in the Arctic. In her igloo, she'll wonder where I've been. I guess I'll put my mucklocks on and ask her if she'll wed me when the ice worm nests again. In the land of the pale blue snow, where it's 99 below, and the polar bears are roaming o'er the plain. In the shadow of the pole, I'll clasp her to my soul. We'll be happy when the ice worm nests again. Oh, the wedding feast will be seal oil and flippers. In our kayaks we'll roam the boundless main. How the walruses will turn their necks to rubber. We'll be happy when the ice worm nests again. In the land of the pale blue snow, where it's 99 below, and the polar bears are roaming o'er the plain. In the shadow of the pole, I'll clasp her to my soul. We'll be happy when the ice worm nests again. Honeymoon down south, but we'll take none of it. And we'll have a whale of a time before we're through. We'll rub noses in the town of Iqaluit. Then we'll trade the huskies in for a new skidoo. In the land of the pale blue snow, where it's 99 below, and the polar bears are roaming o'er the plain. In the shadow of the pole, I'll clasp her to my soul. We'll be happy when the ice worm nests again. And when all those northern icebergs bound around us, she'll present me with a bouncing baby boy. Oh boy, how the polar bears will dance the rumba round us, and the walruses will click their teeth with joy. In the land of the pale blue snow, where it's 99 below, and the polar bears are roaming o'er the plain. In the shadow of the pole, I'll clasp her to my soul. We'll be happy when the ice worm nests again. In the shadow of the pole, I'll clasp her to my soul. We'll be happy when the ice worm nests again.
You've just heard Stompin' Tom Connors and When the Ice Worm Nests Again. Interestingly, there are actually a few species of worms that spend their entire lives in ice, like glaciers, and they can be found in Canada. Bet you didn't know that. Now back to Kathy Nesbitt's vermicomposting workshop.
I have not.
Yeah, it's in the worms.
I believe that the worms absorb or neutralize it. They bind up the chemicals. Yes, it would. Can I send it to you? Yes, Glenn, yeah.
A lot of pesticides are broken down by the composting process, and I imagine they're broken down in the vermicomposting process. Well, not all of them.
Right.
Right. You know, there have been some issues in the United States with yard waste in particular. I can't remember the name because I've, you know, named this long. The particular pesticide. And it is persistent. It has caused a problem. But generally speaking, a lot of the organic stuff, chemicals that we worry about, do get broken down in the composting, process. So it does come out a lot cleaner than it goes in.
Right.
Not 100%.
Okay. Thank you, Glenn. Yes?
You deal with the stupid little fruit stickers.
Those annoying things.
Oh, I know. Oh, they're so annoying. Well, we just end up picking them out in the end. That was about the fruit stickers, if you didn't hear the question. What do you do with the fruit stickers? Yeah. Oh, the stickers are... Oh, they're so annoying. I just picked them out in the end, but they're really annoying. Yeah.
Whose decision was that? Put a sticker on a piece of fruit. Encourage paper fruit stickers.
Yeah, paper ones would be great. Yeah. Okay, so, yes?
Corn cobs and corn husks and corn residue.
Yeah, so corn is pretty... Yeah. What happens with corn cobs, it's a cool thing. People say, you can't compost corn cobs. Yeah, you can. If you like, kind of just chop them up, but the worms will eat the center part, which is really, I guess that's where the meat of the cob is. So they eat the center part, and then the rest just crumbles. And again, that might go through your system a few times, depending if you're grinding it or how you're putting it in there. But if you're putting them in whole, it's kind of neat to how they eat the... The leaves, I haven't had success with the leaves really breaking down. They do last a long time. They're pretty hardy. Yeah.
It's cool to see what they do with tomatillo shells.
With which?
With tomatillo.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They turn them into these beautiful filigrees. Gorgeous.
Okay, so, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I know it's easy to tell when your compost is getting too acidic, but if you don't have a pH test kit, how do you tell if it's like going the other way, too alkaline?
Too alkaline?
Yeah, are there any visual or, you know, sensory indications that it's going too alkaline? Have you ever run into that?
Yeah, if you use litmus paper, be able to, but
if you don't happen to have
a visual. Generally, that's not the issue. The too acidic is more the issue than too alkaline. If it's too acidic, the worms they may start crawling. If your worms are crawling en masse, they do travel around a worm bin, you know, on a regular basis. You'll see worm castings on the side of the bin. That's fine. But if they're traveling en masse, that's worms speak for help. Something's happening here. Get us out of here. Because if they climb out of your bin, like people go, oh, well, can they get out of the bin? Absolutely, they can. But why would they? You know, they eat half their weight. They can't see. They don't have eyes. So no point in going sightseeing around your house. No point. Yes?
And that happens, you just add more carbon material?
Then you would add more, if it's too acidic, then you would add eggshells or calcium carbonate or agricultural lime. Yes?
What sort of systems are you using for handling like grocery store waste? Are you using the large commercial bins or how?
We've got large wooden breeders, so we pre-compost the material and then we add the composted material into our worm bins, which helps us to balance the acidity and helps us to manage a lot of different elements. If you're composting your material first, it's going to be better, but that's not always an option for people, especially if you're living in an apartment or something. Yes?
When there's any complications around pharmaceuticals and human waste, have you ever experienced or met someone that has experienced with human error?
Sorry, say again?
Composting with human manure.
I don't have any experience, and I don't know anyone that's done really dog waste, cat waste, or human waste, but I'm sure that it's possible.
There's a good website. You just Google human manure. There's a good website.
Okay, yeah?
If you're composting it first before you feed it to the worms, what stage should it be at? Like, should there still be sort of some visibility of food?
Yes. You can add compost to a worm composter and then it will make it better compost. But yeah, just partially composted so that it takes away some of the heat and some of the other elements. Like some of the juice will be reduced by composting first. Okay, I'm going to run out of time. I'm going to have to zip through these. I'm not going to tell you about a well-watered garden. Very cool project. Okay, so Guatemala. This past March, I had the opportunity to go to Guatemala. And I did mention at the beginning that I don't have mobile technology, but I am very active in social media. If you're on Twitter, follow me. I'm at Squirm. So fun. And I was on the internet surfing around, and I found information about BioEarth, which is an organization in Guatemala doing worm composting of coffee waste. And so I sent out a tweet saying, what a cool organization, Red Wiggler Worms are the way. Maria Rodriguez, she's the executive director of BioEarth, she contacted me and asked me when I could come to Guatemala. And I don't even think I had said Guatemala before this little interaction, let alone thought about going there. I know it's a super poor country, so I wasn't able to say, gee, yeah, I'll come. It's going to cost you this much money for me to come. I knew they didn't have money, so I said, wow, how am I going to get there? So just talking to a friend, I said, hey, this, look what happened on Twitter. It's such a cool place. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but what a cool thing. And so she said, I'm going to host a fundraiser for you. Wow, how fun. So we screened the movie Dirt. Dirt the movie, if you haven't seen it, it's a must-see documentary about what we're growing in. And my documentary, Squirm, which is available at my booth. And we had a raffle, everything. Anyway, we raised about $3,000 and were able to get me to Guatemala. Anne Lossing is a Canadian expat, and she's in northern Guatemala, and the internet is such an amazing place. She has a Google Alerts, I don't know what it is, maybe Women Worms, Guatemala, I don't know what her alerts were, but she found out that I was coming to Guatemala, and she said, hey, when you come to Guatemala, can you come up to northern Guatemala? Because we can't grow vegetables here. Our soil is so depleted. We're composting, but it's not fast enough. We'd like to work with vermicomposting. Can you come up here? I said, I don't know. Let me defer to Maria. So, and just for your information, Maria is 26, and she's had her organization 5 years. So she started at 21. Wow. When I was 21, I wasn't thinking about the world, that's for sure. I'm so inspired by her. Her parents own the coffee plantation, so she is a person of means. And God bless her for knowing that what she's doing can help the rest of her country. So I ended up going to Guatemala. I guess the next one is. There we go. Oh, they have a little video. Should we show the little video? We probably don't have time, eh? We're going to run out of time. If you want to see the video, it's on my website. But it's just Maria talking about her system. So look at how cool this is. They don't have winter, of course. So they don't have to worry about heating. So this is her crib. She has two of these, and there's 80, she called them cribs, 80 cribs in each one. And they're about, I think they're 8 by 12 feet, made out of cinder blocks. And all she feeds, so they have a hydroelectric plant, or they have a waterfall, so they have their own electricity. They have their own village. The coffee plantations, they generally have a whole town. So they have people there that live there and then work the plantation. And coffee is a really intensive process. So the coffee processing is done at the top of the of a hill. And then with the water is used several times. So it's used to make the electricity, and then it's used to wash the beans and process the coffee beans and the cherries. And then there's aquifers, or whatever you call it, a little trench thing. And the water and the waste is shooshed down to a big pit, then it just is naturally composted in the pit, and she feeds that stuff to the worms. That's it. Like, there's no carbon, nitrogen, adding anything. That's it. Oh my gosh, was I envious. Fabulous. And so if you watch this video, especially the first 3 minutes, it's Maria explaining how this works. And believe it or not, when I was at her facility, she received a phone call for a quote. Somebody wanted a quote for 4,100-pound bags of castings. Wow. And I said, can you fill that order? And she was like, oh yeah, no, yeah, sure, no problem. I was like, wow, how cool is that? Yeah, well, I want to go to Guatemala. I want to live there. How fun. So these are the worm beds down here. And, you know, her dad was hesitant to have her start this worm organization because she said, Dad, you know, we can increase the plant yield, but if you're growing crops and you're doing good and everything's fine, you don't want to mess with that. So he was really reluctant to have Maria set up a worm composting thing. She entered one of those, there was a Climate Spark competition in Toronto. She entered an international kind of Climate Spark competition and won. And I saw her video and she said, ladies and gentlemen, of all these, you know, investors in the audience, ladies and gentlemen, we will take waste and turn it into wealth for women. And it was just like, look at her. Like, where do I sign? I'm going to write you a check right now. Wow, she's just amazing. So during this trip to Guatemala, we were able to go to 6 different women's groups around the country, very poor country, beautiful, strong women. And they were at a 30-year civil war. When you're at a civil war, you don't care about anything else except keeping yourself and your family alive. Like, yeah, I didn't get shot today. Hallelujah. So, you know, no one's thinking about how are we going to keep the water clean? What about the soil critters? Who's looking after them? What about the worms? No, it's how are we going to stay alive? It's today. 30 years, like a whole generation was at war. In 1996, they signed a peace agreement, and the peace agreement, part of it was a law prohibiting femicide. Oh my God, they had to bring in a law that you can't kill women? Wow. I was afraid. As a strong woman, when I read that, because I didn't want to buy the whole Lonely Planet, you know, the book that's this big for South America. I just wanted the 3 pages for Guatemala. So I went to chapters and just read it. And when I read that, I was like, ooh, ah, that's a little bit scary. But at least there's a law against killing me now. So this is just some of the pictures of the beautiful. They have 37 volcanoes at, oh, what am I doing? They have 37 volcanoes at in Guatemala. So that's her dad. There's the waterfall. That's how the water gets shooshed around. This is the nursery. So this is how your coffee starts. And then this is the coffee plant here. It's really, really intensive, but what a beautiful thing. That was an incredible, and I'll just quickly go through. This is Anne Lossing's organization. She started a women's center. And what they're using, you know, whatever you have, that's what you use. They had just some boxes, and boxes are not easy to come by, believe me. Cardboard is it's a hot commodity. And then they just lined them with plastic. Again, it's hard to find all these materials, but so those were their worm bins. How beautiful. Like, you don't need any fancy equipment. Just a box with some plastic, so it's not, you know, a box would break pretty quick if you didn't have it lined. This here is just a tube, and this is something that we implemented this summer in our garden. Just a tube. You can add your material right into the garden, and so the tube has holes in it throughout. You dig that into your garden, and then you add your material. You add a few worms in there, and then the worms can come and go into the soil, so they're taking their nutrients, and then you can move that tube to another spot when you've got, when that part's all converted. You've got your fertilizer pot right there. You move the tube, and then the worms will migrate to the new spot, and you start adding your material in there. It's fantastic. It's so simple. This one is in Guatemala City, in Zonas 3, if anyone's been there. It's the danger zone. These women, they live on the edge of the landfill. It's Central America's largest landfill. And they live actually in the landfill. Did I say landfill? I meant dump. They live in the dump, because a landfill connotates some kind of sanitary process where it's contained or something. There's no process. Everything's there. And Yeah. So what they've done here, they've set them up with these containers. These are the worm bins here. Each woman is responsible for her own worm bin with assistance. And then they take these buckets home, and that's the waste. Because what I discovered in Guatemala was we have so much stuff here, so much garbage and so much stuff that just we just toss it about. We don't even realize how important all this stuff is. They don't have enough waste because they're so poor. People will say, well, if those women are going to make money, then they got to pay me for my stuff. Kind of like the guy from the grocery store, right? Oh, well, you're going to make money down the road. Yeah, but I'm doing a good thing. Just like these women are doing a good thing. But so they're just collecting their own scraps. And I have to tell you, they look well-dressed. So some of them are wearing their traditional colors. The ones that are wearing the Western clothes, this system is working. This is Goodwill. You bring your stuff to Salvation Army Goodwill, and it does get to third world nations. And people, these ladies can buy the stuff for, you know, 5 cents, 10 cents a piece. So it's a wonderful way for us to keep on recycling our stuff. This is another location that we were at. They have, this is amazing, they have this fabulous facility here that's empty because they don't have enough food scraps. And I said, well, wouldn't it be great if the whole village brought all their scraps here? Same thing. Well, if those women are going to make money, they got to pay us, and they don't have money to pay because they don't have it, because they don't have money. And so it goes around circle, and you see all the trucks going from Guatemala City, you know, with garbage and all kinds of fruit and stuff. Well, can't they just stop here and dump some of the stuff here? And so, yeah, it's kind of a funny thing. Burlap is, you know, here we, burlap is, you can get burlap from anywhere almost free, like all the coffee roasters, the chocolate folks that import those things. That's how they package in those countries in burlap bags. So burlap here is a waste product. Over there, not so much. They got to pay for all this burlap. So all these materials they had to pay, but this is so simple. Wooden structure, and then this is just black plastic, like the thick plastic, and that's the base of their worm bin. Fantastic, so simple. Again, they don't have the winter to worry about. This is a chute because Guatemala is very mountainous. So the chute is at the top of the hill. And then they just slide the food down down here, the stuff to be composted. And then this is a big pit down here. And the material just gets processed down there, like turned by the women, and then gets added into these beds. Here's, they've produced 800 pounds. In the video, she says 80. This is Michelle. She's, there's a lot of NGOs working in Guatemala. And there was a, you know, engineers, I said how smart they are. I have so much respect. They had an engineer come and design this bicycle-powered food chopper for the women. So they get a little bit of exercise and they get to chop their food and so fabulous. So that's, so that was pretty amazing facility there. So these are some of the women that we were working with. It was incredible. And I have to say with this group here, these, I think it was this group here, we showed my documentary. It's a documentary. So there's a lot of English speaking. Michelle did an incredible job. She had never seen my documentary before. She translated as it was playing. I don't know what she was saying, but I think she said what it said. The message that the women got was they were so grateful that I came from Canada to come and help them. Then the second part was, remember, they were just brought in a law against femicide, so women are not really revered over in Guatemala. They were so inspired that my husband works for my company. Not only do I have my own company, my man works for me. Wow. Really? And even in Canada, that's probably, you know, something. But it never...
You've been listening to The World of Vermicomposting, from small to megascale, on CFRU 93.3 FM. This was a workshop by Kathy Nesbitt, which is part of the 32nd Annual Guelph Organic Conference and Expo. If you missed the first two 30-minute segments of the workshop, you can hear them online at cfru.ca under Our Planet Sings, the shows that aired on February 15th and March 1st. Also, if you'd like to know more about vermicomposting and the great work that Kathy's involved in, please take a look at her website, kathyscomposters.com.